Mexico and Canada are the two largest trading partners of the U.S. The tariffs likely to fall back on U.S. consumers who could see rising costs on goods from cars to electronics to fruits and vegetables.
That's ABC's Jay O'Brien. Mexico's president said Thursday there will not be a tariff war. French President Macron led a tour of the rebuilt Notre Dame Cathedral after the 2019 fire. It reopens next month. This is ABC News. A hiker missing for nearly 2 months has emerged from the Canadian wilderness.
Sam Bonostic set out for a 10-day solo camping and fishing trip at a park in northwestern Canada back on October 7th. When the 20-year-old didn't return, his family reported him missing. Rescue crews conducted a vast search but found nothing. But the family carried on, staying at a hotel near the park, holding out hope even as temperatures dropped below zero. Then on Tuesday, two people on a trail spotted a man walking towards them with walking sticks and a cut-up sleeping bag tied around his legs for warmth.
ABC's Lionel Moise, the man's being treated for frostbite and smoke inhalation. His mother says he's upset he did not catch a single fish. New charges against a Colorado dentist accused of poisoning his wife, and prosecutors now say James Craig also plotted to kill the detective investigating his wife's death. Craig is due back in court next month. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Well, you know, you prove them right, they'll be louder. That's part of the territory. You carry that until you do something about it, and unfortunately we didn't tonight.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers at home today against the Minnesota Gophers. At stake for the Badgers, keeping the Paul Bunyan axe in Madison and a chance at a bowl game bid alive. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy and breezy today, gradually becoming mostly sunny this afternoon. Our high today in the upper teens to low 20s. Tonight, mostly clear, our low between 5 and 10. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, breezy, upper teens to low 20s. By Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 20s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temperature 13.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time for a special edition of the show. We'll look at Black Friday deals and look back at a couple of great interviews of the year. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the elections next year. early next year. A long-time, long-serving progressive justice is retiring, leaving an open seat. If conservatives are to win that seat, they take back control of the state Supreme Court. If they don't, then there's a chance that progressives control the court for at least a couple of more years by the time another progressive seat comes up, as those seats rotate through most years in those spring elections. So needless to say, conservatives, Republicans, national groups on the right will be coming for this Wisconsin Supreme Court seat next April with all the fury they can muster. On the progressive side of the ledger, there is one candidate announced who has some endorsements already. They're pretty good endorsements. Susan Crawford is a judge in Dane County, and she has already been endorsed by the four progressive justices on the court currently. And so with that, we welcome into the program Judge Susan Crawford to learn more about the Supreme Court race. Judge Crawford, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me this morning.
Tell us more about your early career.
Yeah, so I was hired by then Attorney General Jim Doyle at the Wisconsin Department of Justice in the late 90s, 1997, after going to law school at the University of Iowa and working my first couple of years out of law school at the Iowa Attorney General's office. So then Attorney General Jim Doyle stole me away from the Iowa Attorney General. I started working as a criminal prosecutor, mainly prosecuting serious felony cases in the appellate courts. So that's the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. Oh. I first argued a case in front of the Iowa Supreme Court back in 1998, which is something that really made an impression on me as a young lawyer.
By the way, if folks here in the background, we again have to remind every guest, we are extremely pro-puppy on the show. So if
my dog just got up.
I was going to say, if there's anybody that needs attention or love, we are very, very much for that. So this always comes up in Supreme Court races. Invariably, somebody on one campaign or another will bring this to like law and order and criminal murder cases, even though that's such a small part of what a state Supreme Court actually does. But in your case, there is some very real criminal experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's something that I spent the first 9 years of my career working on. It was always important to me to make sure that in those cases that I was standing up for the rights of the crime victims and the safety of our community, but also making sure that the process was fair for the person who I was prosecuting. The system has a lot of safeguards, and part of my job as a prosecutor was to make sure that those are followed.
And then you moved into another area that I think is extremely important for anybody who would want to serve on a state Supreme Court, because as we have certainly learned through news headlines, state Supreme Courts take on matters related to, in this case, maybe squabbles between a legislature and a governor's office. So it's important to know about the inner workings of government and not have to learn that on the fly. And for you, that includes serving in multiple state agencies, in the executive branch along the way. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So after Jim Doyle was elected governor, I had the opportunity, many opportunities throughout his 2 years or two terms in office for 8 years to serve in a variety of different roles. I served for a period of time at the Department of Corrections as chief of staff to the secretary there. So had a view of the entire correctional system. I have visited many of our prisons in the state, talked to innumerable probation and parole agents, correctional workers, and inmates. And I think that's a really important perspective on the system to see it from that angle. I also worked at the Department of Natural Resources as head of the Division of Enforcement. So my job was to make sure that we appropriately referred cases to the Wisconsin Department of Justice for prosecution for serious violations of our environmental laws that are intended to make sure that we have clean air and safe drinking water and that our beautiful natural resources are protected. And then part of that job, too, was to make sure that the Department of Justice prosecuted those cases appropriately and got good outcomes for the state. And then finally, I worked at the governor's office as chief legal counsel, a very broad role that almost defies description because so many issues come through the governor's office on so many topics. But in general, my role was to make sure that we were applying and enforcing the laws fairly and equally throughout our state.
We're talking with Dane County Judge Susan Crawford, who's a candidate for state Supreme Court. And we've started this first interview with her with, of course, mostly biographical information so that you understand where she came from. And when we get into the portion of the interview now, in passing along that the four current sitting liberal justices have all endorsed her candidacy, and you say, well, you know, yeah, she worked for Governor Jim Doyle, but, you know, what else is it about the race that might come up? I think that's where we're getting into the heart of things now, Susan, where you say, where you note that you were a private practice attorney, you helped protect voting rights, workers' rights, and also represented Planned Parenthood to defend access to reproductive health care. And it is, you know, there is no denying that in the last Supreme Court race, reproductive health care rights were an issue. Frankly, every election since the Dobbs decision has featured this as well. So I'd like you to talk a bit about the values that you're bringing to this race and the qualities that you would have as a justice in these important areas to voters.
Right. Thanks, Pat. So the one thing I want to help people to understand that as a judge, I can't say how I would rule on any particular case that might be headed to the Supreme Court or in the Supreme Court. But I can tell you about my values, things I've worked on in the past, how I've chosen to spend my time, you know, using my legal skills and my experience in my career. And part of that has been really focused, well, you know, my entire career really has been focused on protecting people and upholding their rights in our courts. I do that every day as a judge. I want to make sure that I get the facts right, that I apply the law fairly and impartially and use some common sense doing so, and that the result that I order is one that is fair for the parties and just for the parties. So just with that background, on the topic of our democracy and voting rights, for example, those are issues that are perennially before our state Supreme Court. I think it's really important for the court to protect the right to vote, to make sure citizens have access to the polls, and that all of our voting and election laws are being applied and interpreted and enforced fairly to help people to exercise their right to vote. On the issue of reproductive rights, you know, look, I'm a mom. I have two kids who are now young adults. I have been through pregnancy, labor, and birth. It's not for wimps. And I understand how important it is for women to have health care during those times and to have all the options available to them to make sure that they can make decisions about their bodies, about their pregnancies, that they're able to protect themselves.
You know, those values obviously mean something to the sitting justices right now, because you have Ann Walsh Bradley, who is retiring, and that is what has opened up this seat. Rebecca Dallet, Jill Karofsky, Janet Protasiewicz have all said that they're going to support your candidacy. So, I mean, what does that tell you to get their endorsements so early about where they feel like your values align with theirs?
Well, I think that they are doing a great job on the Wisconsin Supreme Court in making fair decisions. And I think that they have the same approach to the law that I do, which is that they understand and believe that it is really important to get to the facts. You know, truth is a really important value in our justice system. And part of what we're trained to do as a judge is to determine what the facts are. I think they agree with me about that. And they also want to make fair, impartial decisions. They're not there to push a partisan political agenda. And by the way, I believe my opponent in this race is in this race to push a very extreme partisan agenda. He's a longtime partisan politician, And I think that that is why he's running for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So I believe I've gotten those endorsements from those four justices because they, like me, believe it is really important to have a state Supreme Court that is standing up for the rights of Wisconsinites.
And that really gets us to the, you know, the last topic, the race itself. And if no other candidates get in, it's quite likely going to be you versus Waukesha County Judge Brad Schimmel. Brad Schimmel was the state attorney general from 2015 to 2019. And we know Wispolitics added up all the totals from the 2023 Supreme Court race and found a grand total of $56 million spent between the candidates, political parties, and outside groups. So the last thing to you, Judge Crawford, is like it or not, this is going to be a big, important, expensive, and probably at sometimes not very nice race. Tell voters why you feel you're up to it.
Well, I've got the experience. I think that I need to run and run well. You know, I'm not a politician. I'm a judge, previously a lawyer, but I know how to pick a good team, and I have a great team assembled to run this race for me and with me, who are standing by me and helping me to make sure that I've got the resources that I need to run a smart race and to show the voters that I am a person with the right values, you know, that I am ethical, that I am fair, impartial, standing up for their rights. And they are helping me to get out all around the state of Wisconsin right now, where I can talk to voters and listen to them, primarily listen and make sure that I know what they're thinking and what's important to them. So I think we are well prepared to run a strong race here in Wisconsin.
And a strong race will be required because of what we know things are going to be like in Wisconsin coming right out of the November election into next year's February primary and April general. Judge Susan Crawford, so nice to get to meet you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again during the campaign. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Thanks so much, Pat.
We'll have more Up North News Radio coming up next. You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Heroicdeed.com.
With the holidays around the corner, why not check the Badger fan in your life off the list early? Take advantage of Black Friday deals on Badger tickets and give the gift of an unforgettable experience with discounts on Badger men's and women's basketball, hockey, and wrestling tickets, and a winter full of exciting home matchups. There's something for every Badger fan. Visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS to explore all the Badger Black Friday deals and to secure your seats. uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Now, I've been reading up on the policies of all the presidential candidates with an eye on my wallet. And former President Trump has been talking up a new 20% tax on goods from other countries. It's called a tariff. I did some research, and it's not sounding good for the prices that we pay. A tariff is just a tax that the government charges to businesses when they bring goods into the country. And the National Retail Federation says that tariffs force small businesses to raise prices or just eat those costs. And typically, big corporations just pass those prices on to consumers. The Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center says that, quote, Trump's tariffs would significantly raise the prices of imported goods since they'd mostly be passed on to consumers. And I know prices are not rising like they were. I mean, hooray for that. But man, I still can't afford to pay 20% more for things. We will keep you posted on how this develops. In the meantime, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book.
reading rainbow.
Okay, no, this isn't actually Reading Rainbow, but pretty close. We're going to talk to author Laura Bird in just a moment here. First, from the mailbag on our text line at 855-75-CIVIC from Len in Madison. It is important to have some optimism and hope, especially for the next 4 years. The Trump presidency will have a lot in common with a high-fiber meal. This, too, shall pass. Thank you, Len. All right, time for our Wednesday homeroom segment, where normally we're talking about schools and public education. Obviously, we've had a lot to say about that leading up to the election with all the referendums. But for this segment, we thought we'd go more into the area of literature and books, especially for, you know, a niche audience like middle schoolers, for example. And so author Laura Ann Bird joins us now to talk more about, you know, what she's written, the importance of writing, you know, for an audience like that of middle schoolers, and more about, you know, especially being a book author in this day and age. Laura Bird, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Pat, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tell us a little bit about your background. What you know, what led you to start writing you know, children's books, middle school books, and you know, what would folks know you for a particular book or issue?
Sure. Well, gosh, that's a lot of questions in one. I'll start, I guess, with the fact that when I grew up, I was a voracious reader, and my parents read to me every night, and they let me wander through the stacks of the Wauwatosa Public Library, where I could choose whatever books I wanted and assemble these amazing stacks, and we read really widely. And I knew from a very young age that books meant more to me than almost anything, and I wanted to write for kids someday when I grew up. And I've written two middle grade novels, as you mentioned, and a middle grade audience technically is 8 to 12 year olds, 8 to 13 year olds. That's going to depend on, you know, the reading ability of a child and or the willingness of a grown-up to read out loud to them. So I highly recommend that. And although my books are geared towards children, I do think it's worth mentioning that a lot of adults have really loved my books also. And I think that speaks to middle grade fiction and why it's so powerful. There's sort of an eternal quality to it, a universality to it, that I think really speaks to adults too. So my first book came out in March of 2022, and it's called Crossing the Pressure Line. And my second book just came out a month or two ago called Marvelous Jackson. So I can tell you more about those books. Yeah. I don't know what.
Well, let's first, I know you wouldn't necessarily mention it, so let me mention that Crossing the Pressure Line won awards from the Independent Book Publishers Association, the Midwest Independent Publishers Association, and the Arts and Literature Laboratory. So I guess I'm really not surprised that there would be a follow-up. So can you give us a couple of quick thumbnails on Crossing the Pressure Line, and then how Marvelous Jackson follows up to that?
So that's a great question. So my two books are considered standalone companion stories, which means they're loosely connected and you see a lot of the same characters from one book to the other, but you don't actually have to read one to understand or appreciate the other. So I think it's important to mention that. So Crossing the Pressure Line, my first book, centers on a 12-year-old girl, Claire Birch. She lives in Chicago. And she suddenly has to upend all of her summertime plans so that she can honor a very special request made by her late grandfather. And that entails heading to the Northwoods of Wisconsin for an entire summer with her mother and her grandmother and their little wiener dog, Roger, where Claire has an incredible coming of age season that really stretches her comfort zone in unexpected ways. Jack has way too much free time on his hands, and he needs to get himself a hobby and get himself on the right path pronto, or his dad is going to send him off to boarding school in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I just need to say, I love the UP. I am not anti-UP. But when you're not an outdoor kid and you're, you know, faced with the possibility of being shipped off to the Davy Crockett Institute of Outdoor Learning, you need to change your ways. So that's Jack's story. In a nutshell, he rediscovers the love of baking that he shared with his mom when she was alive and when he was a little boy. And that kind of brings him a new sense of hope and purpose.
Nice. So what, but before I forget, for folks that want to learn more about the books, would you send them to the publisher, orangehatpublishing.com?
You absolutely could go to Orange Hat. And I love Orange Hat because they are based in Wisconsin. They do a great job elevating Midwestern authors. I can't recommend them enough. So if you go to their website, they have, you know, all the books for sale. You can go to my website, which is laurabirdbooks.com. You can shop at your local independent store, of which Wisconsin has many. It's really important to support those businesses. You can also, if you prefer to shop online, go to bookshop.org and you can order there and they can ship right to your door.
Okay. So I just want to make sure we got that out there because I didn't want to forget at the end of the interview here. But so let's come back to why middle grade fiction seems to be your sweet spot. How did you come to find out that that's where you enjoy writing most?
I love that 8 to 12 year old age range. So much is happening developmentally to kids during that stage. And if you've raised kids, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're really starting to figure out who and what and how they want to be in the world. And that's a tricky time because there are sometimes some conflicting values that take place. You know, you have a kid who really wants their independence and doesn't want mom and dad around. But at the same time, like at the end of the day, they really want their parents to come in and give them a kiss before they go to bed. Or kids really want to be different and stand out from the crowd. But really, you still really want some close, good friends so that you feel like you belong somewhere. So these conflicting values, I think, in real life can be very furious and cause a lot of angst. And I say that, of course, as the mother of three, mm-hmm. because I've been there, done that. But I think they make for incredible fiction. And I just want kids that age, you know, no matter what they're dealing with, whether they feel like they don't fit in, they don't look like everybody else, they don't have what everyone else has, I want them to be able to open up my books and say, wow, I'm not alone. There are other kids that are just like me.
Laura Ann Bird, thank you again so much for visiting with us. I know we're going to have more conversations and just get more folks reading in the new year. Thanks again.
Thanks, Pat.
When we come back, we're going to sit down with some of my Courier Newsroom colleagues from around the country working in newsrooms in swing states and get some of their observations on the election results. Quite a mixed bag, a lot of ticket splitters out there. So stick around for that as you maybe prepare the first omelet of the day using turkey and all the leftovers. Go ahead. You won't regret it. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Back in just a bit.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Well, let me tell you, it's not just cheese boxes that start flying off the shelf during the holidays. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. Dana Rohde with the Wisconsin Potato and Vegetable Growers says their statistics show people buy a lot of potatoes during the holidays.
So I have data from 2023 that shows that consumers across the nation spent roughly $220 million on 265 million pounds of fresh potatoes. So they're buying potatoes every week of the year, but there's a sizable increase, especially during the holidays, just because consumers are looking for any kind of potatoes to include in their holiday celebrations.
Dana Rohde with the Wisconsin Potato and Vegetable Growers. She's their consumer education specialist. She also reminds you, potatoes are not only good on your pocketbook, they're good for your body. A potato has as much potassium as a banana, and it also offers vitamin C.
Farming is full of up and downs, but with the right tools, you can navigate any cycle. Join Compeer Financial's Grain Vantage webinar on December 4th from 9 to noon. Hear from ag industry pros like me, Rob Sharkey, during this free virtual event. Leave with real-world strategies to help you manage risk and explore opportunities in today's market. Visit compeer.com/grainvantage to sign up. The Grain Vantage webinar, helping you take control of your farm's financial future.
As the weather changes, it can start to impact feed quality. Don't let your cows become the victims of the ration roller coaster. Adding Generator Elite to your herd's ration can introduce beneficial microbials that support gut health and help the herd navigate the highs and lows of feed quality, all while using less than an ounce per day per cow. Learn more about Generator Elite at bio-vet.com.
Innovation. And it may seem like it's a long ways off, but plans are already underway for the 2025 Midwest Horse Fair. Their theme, Journey Home. The dates for the big event, April 11th through the 13th at the Alliant Energy Center grounds in Madison. They're also reminding horse owners, if you'd like to be involved in hands-on learning with their clinics that are held at the Midwest Horse Fair, those applications are now being accepted. They're also getting ready to host the state's largest PRCA rodeo during the big event. Saddle bronc riding, bareback riding, steer wrestling, team roping, tie-down roping, barrel racing, and bull riding. Those rodeo dates are April 11th and 12th. Tickets go on sale for the rodeo beginning in January. You want to send in your application to be involved in a clinic? Go to MidwestHorseFair.com. There's a little food news for you on a Friday. I'm Pam Yonke.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy and breezy today, gradually becoming mostly sunny this afternoon. Our high today in the upper teens to low 20s. Tonight, mostly clear, our low between 5 and 10. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, breezy, upper teens to low 20s. By Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 20s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temperature, 13.
Max Inc. Radio.
We're replaying the amazing live performance from an 11-year-old, plus new music from around the state. I'm Terry Barr.
Saturday and Sunday night starting at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Matt Rothschild is going to be sitting in the big chair to break down all the news with analysis and humor. Don't miss it.
Matt and Air on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All right, now this is a new treat. I promised y'all something special. And have I ever got it from Courier Newsroom. I have got four of my colleagues from the other state-based newsrooms. There are 11 total. Joining us from the Gander in Michigan is Kyle Kaminsky. From the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina is Billy Ball. From the Keystone in Pennsylvania is Sean Kitchen. And from the Copper Courier in Arizona is Cam Stevenson. Gentlemen, it's so good to see y'all. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be on.
Billy, let me start with you because you also had that very colorful gubernatorial candidate there in North Carolina who said something like, you know, some people just need a killing. And so for folks in Wisconsin who weren't following it, he did not succeed in winning the governor's race, correct?
He did not. He did not. He didn't even come close, which is unusual in the state of North Carolina. It's probably a testament to the fact that the things that Donald Trump can get away with saying doesn't always apply to everyone else. And it didn't apply for Robinson. He lost by a bunch.
And Cam, in Arizona, you had Carrie Lake running again, and she fell. Did she also fall well short of winning?
Not as far from grace as what happened in North Carolina. She did lose Ruben Gallego, but she did get more votes than Kamala Harris. For what?
Okay.
So it was pretty close.
And in Michigan, Kyle, there was a U.S. Senate race.
That's right. Alyssa Slotkin pulled out ahead over Republican Mike Rogers to fill the open Senate seat. Pretty significant win in a sea of not so many wins for Democrats. But
right. Well, and in of course, in Wisconsin, you had Tammy Baldwin winning, even though Trump won the state as well. Sean, I believe from a Senate race standpoint, you're the one thing that's not like the others.
Yeah, I think, well, it was a really bad night in general for Pennsylvania. Senator Casey looks like he's about to lose. It's still going through a recount right now, but Senator Casey's trailing Dave McCormick by less than 17,000 votes in a recount. But it's going to be a really long shot if Casey's going to pull it out.
Okay, so you're the exception to the rule, but let me come to the rule. And Billy, I'll come back to you for starters. In all of these other states where Trump won the swing state, but there was still a marquee race where the Democrat won, do you have a particular theory on why that was, as far as were people like splitting their ticket on purpose because they wanted a sense of balance, or did they just look at it from a personality standpoint, how do you explain the split vote in your state?
You know, North Carolina is famous for split tickets. Like it's one of the things we do. We for years we've had folks here who hop into races, who hop into elections, and they'll vote for a far right Republican and then go down the ballot and vote for someone who's a moderate to liberal Democrat. It's something that we do. And the governor's race, as you can see in years past, we've had a Democrat governor, a Republican lieutenant governor. North Carolina does it a lot. I think this one is a little bit outside the norm because Mark Robinson was such a toxic candidate.
Yes, he was a little bit different there. And Cam, in Arizona, what do you attest kind of the split decision?
It's a lot of things out here. Our Senate candidate had a different level of toxicity than what you saw in North Carolina. Carrie Lake had just spent the past 4 years burning through any goodwill she had with the Arizonans. And so people were very happy to vote for Ruben Gallego. He also appealed to a more populist working class message. You know, most of his events were at like local boxing clubs or places where you could just hang out and chat and talk. And so I think from talking with people, they felt more comfortable voting for Ruben Gallego. They didn't know much about Harris. They know they didn't like Trump, but they felt that, I think what you mentioned, if they voted for Trump and Gallego, that would give the sense of balance in some way.
Sure. Kyle, I think of Michigan as especially swingy because you've really have gone back and forth in terms of Republican governors, Republican control of the legislature. Last time around, though, it was a Democratic trifecta. This time around, it was split. What's your take on all of that?
I mean, we had a similar split ticket situation here. A lot of voters who supported Slotkin for Senate didn't back Harris for president. I think this suggests that many Michiganders aren't looking at the candidates, are looking at the candidates individually rather than voting along strict party lines. Slotkin ran a pretty smart campaign, focused on kitchen table issues like healthcare, manufacturing jobs, infrastructure, and it was clear that kind of made the difference in the campaign. She was able to connect with voters that were kind of outside those areas that traditionally leaned blue, farmers in rural areas, auto workers in small towns, and it really highlighted the ability to make politics feel personal this time around. It wasn't just about policy. It was about trust, shared experiences, listening to what people needed.
And Sean, in Pennsylvania, again, Senate race notwithstanding, it is a state that is pretty well known for ticket splitting, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw a lot of that in this election. There was a drop-off between Trump and McCormick. I think you saw that in the other states. With the Senate races, the drop off between Trump and the next Republican candidate. And I think Casey just wasn't able to pull it off. I think he was just the casualty of Democrats just not doing well, like an anti-incumbent wave that happened here in Pennsylvania.
Now let's go to the top of the ticket here, because it felt like Kamala Harris was here all the time. And if she wasn't, then Tim Walz was. And it felt like there was all of this momentum. And now, of course, we're into the season of second guessing. That's fine. We'll do it for this segment here. And I'll kick it off by saying, and again, no, there's no one right answer, but I certainly hear a lot of folks here thinking that if, especially with Tim Walz being from the state next door, that if he'd have kept up that populist message, you know, that corporations have been price gouging and we need to do that, but that after the Kamala Harris Donald Trump debate, they kind of pulled back on that and they kind of played it too safe. Now, again, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that was the impression I got of maybe what the Harris-Walz ticket could have done differently in Wisconsin. Billy, do you think that there's anything that explains where the Harris-Walz ticket might have done things differently in your state?
I think that, you know, just like y'all in your swing states, we saw a lot of them. We saw a lot of the candidates. And the messaging was, you know, remarkably disciplined, I thought. And for what it's worth, I know there are going to be a lot of people who second guess what Harris's campaign did. But I you know, for the situation that she was put in, partway through a presidential election year, she did a remarkable job of galvanizing people and getting them out. Honestly, I don't know if there was something she could have said or done much differently in a year when people just weren't happy with how much they were paying at the grocery store. And I think that there are, you know, one of the problems with that is I flat out don't think that traditional media explained very well how inflation worked or how it was impacting people or what the candidates' policies were going to do along that. But I think that was a big thing there. And so I'm not so much critiquing the Harris campaign. I'm sure there were things she could have done differently. I'm sure folks down in Pennsylvania wonder why their governor wasn't selected as the VP pick. I'm sure that's coming up a lot with the Democrats there. But I think here it was just a wave of people who are tired of how much things cost. It's hard to win an election when inflation was as bad as it was at the beginning of Biden's term.
Sean, do you feel that there is still second guessing that Josh Shapiro wasn't chosen to be the running mate, or were there other reasons why the Harris-Walz ticket fell short there, or was the year simply out of their control?
I think it was just out of control, out of their everyone's control. I don't think Shapiro would have made a difference in Pennsylvania, or with the other tickets. Like, I mean, if it came down to just Pennsylvania, I think you could probably second guess not picking Shapiro, but we lost, you know, the Harris campaign lost a lot of the swing states. But Shapiro was also very supportive and campaigning around the clock for Democrats and for Harris in the final month, 6 weeks out of the election, going to a lot of different things. With regards to the campaign, I don't know if they could have done anything different. I personally thought it was an interesting choice for them to have two or three high-profile Republicans for Harris events in the Philadelphia suburbs when they didn't have any rallies with base supporters, base Democrats in the final weeks of the election.
That is a point that's come up a lot, is what was too much effort put into reaching out to, you know, what they hoped would be enough moderate Republicans. And again, getting away from that core message for progressives. All right. Rather than beat a dead horse, we'll move on to another point here for Kyle and Cam. Let's go with just the year itself, covering the campaign, either, you know, personally, event that you went to, folks that you met, or things that you saw while you were working with the team at your own newsroom. What's going to stand out for you in terms of the way that you covered and your team covered the 2024 campaign? Let's start in Michigan there, Kyle.
I'm trying to think of a moment that stood out to me from this election cycle, and it has to be at the when it was pretty clear that Trump was going to win at the end of the night. I was in Detroit at the Michigan Democratic Party's watch party. Talked to a lot of voters. There was just kind of a mix of determination and this sense of disillusionment, I guess, among Democrats who realized how much work it takes to maintain this progress and how fragile it can be. So it was a big reminder for me that every election is a chance to kind of learn, adapt, understand the pulse of the electorate, and realize how we can repeatedly get it wrong. So that was one big takeaway.
We've definitely learned that. We've learned again how easy it is to get things wrong. Cam, what'll stand out for you when you look back at 2024?
Yeah, I mean, I think our strengths in reporting really shone through when we focused on tangible issues over the idealism of some more established candidates. You know, during the state legislature, we covered very heavily a series of abortion bans that went into effect and then didn't go into effect, and were able to break that down very clearly. Similarly, when we got into our ballot, we had 13 ballot propositions that were there. And so when we took the time to break those down individually for people, that felt like a valuable service. When we were working, you know, when we were covering campaigns and talking about these vague concepts of working class and we're going to help people afford houses and we're going to build a million houses. Those sound like very lofty ideals that I think people kind of disassociate with or just see as a run-of-the-mill promise. Whereas when we were able to kind of talk about things that they saw on their ballot and things that they could vote on, that's where it felt like we were making a real impact, and that's where we received the most gratitude from our readers.
Sounds good. Sean, looking back at the year, what are you going to remember?
I'm going to remember just going to a lot of the different events and meeting people. Pennsylvania is a very big state, and going to events from pretty much like from Pittsburgh all the way through northeastern Pennsylvania, and getting to talk to hundreds of voters or thousands of voters, like just being able to and also like relay their messages. Personally, one of the things I thought was interesting, just doing my first time working a cycle like this, was just getting to meet a lot of the national and local reporters at all the different events and being able to like pick their brains on things.
Billy, we'll wrap up with you. What are you going to remember from the year of campaigning?
You know, despite all the doom and gloom that a lot of Democrats are feeling right now after the presidential election, North Carolina Democrats had a pretty good night. And I think that that's something that they're going to be talking about here for a few years. We saw one of the smallest shifts to Republicans of any state in this election. Won not only the governor's race, lieutenant governor, secretary of state. It looks like Democrats are going to pull out a really enormous seat on the state Supreme Court, which, given all of our huge issues with gerrymandering in this state, that's a big deal down the road. So I think what I will recall is that just like Cam and a lot of these other editors are saying, we focused on the less of the personalities and more of the issues that are affecting people at home. As I mentioned before, the grocery prices, trying to explain stuff like that, trying to explain the impact of tariffs and really, quite honestly, if I hate to beat a dead horse, but explaining the things that traditional and legacy media did a awful job of explaining during this election, and they tend to do. So I'll be proud of that. And I think where we go from here in North Carolina is, the road is not so dim, to be honest.
The media coverage we're going to talk about in depth next hour, as always, on Fridays with Mark Jacobs. So stick around for that. Billy Ball from the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, Sean Kitchen from the Keystone in Pennsylvania, Kyle Kaminsky from the Gander in Michigan, Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier in Arizona. You can catch all of their work. You can get to all of their sites by going to couriernewsroom.com. Gentlemen, thank you. So great to see you all. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too.
We'll be back with more after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You
you are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You see him now running up the steps of the state capitol and then all the way back to Sun Prairie like he's training for a prize fight. Luke Mathers, ladies and gentlemen, on the anniversary of the premiere of the first Rocky movie. Mr. Mathers, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Kreitlow. And Mr. Bach, how are you gentlemen doing?
We're good. We're good. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say that if you had one handy, you would have an I voted sticker on?
Yes. I was looking for, I was getting ready. I've been listening all morning long. Tony, you're wrong about turkey. Jeez, come on. Way too many references to strip clubs as well. Was not anticipating that on my Thursday morning.
I wasn't as a new legislator either. And it's like, this is my first problem. Okay.
I got brought up several different times this morning and I was shocked, but you know, I was looking for the I voted sticker and I just could not find one before jumping on with you here on Up North News Radio.
Tell us about your vote.
I went to the website volume1.org. I typed in one first and I got an error message and I was like, oh, I think I got to spell it out then. So folks, they didn't tell you it's O-N-E for one.
Yes.
Volume1.org.
As in the O-Needers. That's a movie reference. You're welcome, everybody.
There you go. And you can head over and you can vote for your favorite morning show, your favorite radio show, I believe, is the category. But you could also vote for your favorite radio station. We got some friends.
Tap on there. You got WCFW on there. So
So we wanted several different civic media options there. Mike McKay is there. Oh, and literally my phone got that command and started playing it. So
oh, that's funny.
There you go.
That is the
it works. Folks, smart speakers, they're always listening. You can just ask them and they'll start playing.
They're always listening.
They are. But you can vote for several different civic media products there in the Chippewa Valley as well. But highly recommend, my first vote was for Up North News Radio.
Oh, bless your heart. That's great. Here's the thing. The Chippewa Best of the Chippewa Valley Awards from Volume 1 was started like the year after I left TV. And so I was never, you know, in that whole voting thing. And it was only afterwards that I'm looking at some of my old colleagues getting, you know, favorite anchor, favorite meteorologist, favorite sportscaster. And I felt so, so left out for all these years. And now 17 years later, after the awards are started, I have a chance.
There we go.
I have a chance to come in first or last. Yes. To be first or last potentially in one of these things. One never knows.
It's an honor to be nominated.
It's
right?
An honor to be put in a list that they have to list because it's every show in town. Yes. Are you
Stop
a
being so Midwestern?
Ope. See, that's Tony again saying on YouTube, or it's rigged against Pat. Well,
and Greg.
Yes, of course. That's exactly what I meant to say. Conan O'Brien fan? Yes or no, guys? See, yeah. he's been picked to host the Oscars for the first time.
Yeah, I think I don't have like a dedicated following to him, but I think most of the stuff of his that I see, I find funny. So
I find him to be probably the funniest mind of the last generation, and I want to see those ratings for the Oscars.
Do you think that he will? Is it too obvious to keep playing off the Chris Rock routine? Is he going to go for getting somebody to come up and slap him at some point? I mean, if you're Conan,
I think he might make a reference, but he's really good friends with him, and I don't think he wants to bring that up. Like, and I'm sure the Academy's probably like, yeah, you know what? Not our shining moment. So
that's true. Yes,
I'm sure all the pre-production aspect of that is, please don't mention that. Please don't mention that.
Yeah. Conan did host the Emmys in 2002 and 2006. This will be his first time hosting the Oscars, which will air on ABC on March 2nd. So that was some of the new news that came out.
I can't believe it's award season already, folks.
Like we said with Jimmy in the last half hour, I can't believe it's football playoffs already. I mean,
let me enjoy my turkey and my cranberry sauce before I have to start hearing about the award ceremonies that are going to take place in February.
And yet, what message went out to all the civic media folks yesterday?
I know, I had to get one.
The WBA awards are coming up.
And so, but to be fair, I've been kind of a stickler with that one throughout the year. So most shows across the network should have, like, at least in the back of their mind, been hearing about those year round, which is less of a lift, I think. Then
I realized last year in trying to come up with, geez, what did I talk about? Who was interesting or whatever? So I actually did start a document, you know, tracking what we talked about each day. And I'm just going to the window right now. It's 73 pages.
There we go.
Which is not going to be fun, but it's more help than I had a year ago when I was trying to figure out, you know, what
it's going to be really helpful, because it's going to be Greg told a great joke and it's going to be that day. And then we just know it was a good episode. So you've got all the notes you've got needed right there.
Oh, yes, exactly. Melissa Schrader writes on Facebook, "Hey, Pat, you have my vote." There you go. Look at that. I'm up to like three votes at this point.
Excuse me, I have your vote, too. I'm part of this as well. Thank you very much.
Greg and Greg, too.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
We got to get like a little like musical ditty that we could put at the end of the intro so that when Don Rue's done, it's like, and Greg Bach, and just like tack that on for the voting period.
We'll fix it in post. It's okay. Oh, wait, this is live. Yeah. And me. I've given you all of 30 seconds to tell us anything new and interesting that we can find across the Civic Media universe.
Deer Camp kicks off this weekend. You're going to want to tune in, head over to the Civic Media website. You're going to see so much about what's going on for the Deer Camp Roundup that our friends in Park Falls are putting on both this weekend, all throughout next week, and the following weekend. So head over. There's going to be a lot of it online, over the airwaves, a huge presence for opening weekend kicking off this weekend.
It sounded like a lot of fun hearing it described in the station meeting. So I'm going to make sure to try to tune in as well. And everybody should go to civicmedia.us to learn more. Luke Mathers, thank you so much. Thank you for your support.
Always great to meet somebody I got to vote for.
For us and me. Greg Bach will be back at 10 a.m. for Matt and Air on Air, and we will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. here on Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great day. You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, it's all about comedy as I welcome Chicago comedian Pat McGann and host of MeTV's Tune In With Me, Bill Leff. And we get a sneak peek at a new show called Wabino Volunteer Fire.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Bringing the house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Friday. The Badgers battle the Gophers for Paul Bunyan's axe. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on your local Civic Media radio station, 1260 a.m. WLAK.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Online spending during the 5 days from Thanksgiving through Monday is expected to increase by 7% this year, according to Adobe Analytics. The company's lead insight analyst, Vivek Pandia, says more than $40 billion will be spent in that period, and that includes today.
We're seeing Black Friday online sales continue to grow significantly, especially this year. We're expecting about 9.9% year-on-year growth, and that'll account for about $10.8 billion in spend. So a record level of spending for Black Friday this year.
The post-Thanksgiving travel rush could be messy in areas of the Great Lakes region. That's where several feet of lake effect snow are possible. President-elect Trump's threatened tariffs against Mexico and Canada, but Mexico's president said Thursday there would not be a tariff war with the U.S. And French President Macron showed off the rebuilt Notre Dame Cathedral after the 2019 fire. It reopens December 8th. This is ABC.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs?